You're listening to a sermon from Heights Church, located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. For more information on our church, please visit heightschurchmn.org.
As we've transitioned, right? We're no longer in our other building. We're no longer doing services the way that we used to do them. This is our first week where we're not, like, actually totally sitting around tables. Our worship team, Grace and I, teased about, like, they all used to, like, walk on this big, beautiful stage, all 47 of them, and hold their various instruments and sing and all these things. And now we have our cubby, and it's great. It's different, right? And God just started to just enlighten that in my heart. And over again, I've heard from so many people, I don't feel like I fit. I don't know where I fit. I don't know what I'm supposed to be here. I don't know what this is supposed to look like. I've heard this is not church. It's different. And as God just started to churn in me, the story of the people of Israel is our story. Because I didn't go into Daniel or into the life of Joseph or even into Esther. I went into the book of Jeremiah. I went into the backstory before God sends them into exile. And he's trying to show them why this is happening and what he wants from them. All right, I'm going to ask the question. Why did the exile happen? Why did God exile his people? What was his purpose? To punish them because they were disobedient?
Yeah.
That's what we think. That's honestly, and if you read a lot of Jeremiah, that's what you see. But we're going to look at Jeremiah today, and we're going to see something really different. God punished their disobedience, yes. But God's heart, when he sent them into exile, was completely different. God's heart was that a people whose religion had become their culture would find a relationship with the God that loves them in a brand new way. God wanted his people to know him. He wanted to write the law on their hearts. He wanted them and him to know each other. Because you know what had happened? The church, the temple, the service had become the connection. They were meant to be the people of God. You will be my people, and I will be your God. And you will bear my name. And what you do and who you are and how you act throughout your whole life will be my voice to the world. But that's not, by the time that the exile happens, that's not what's going on at all. In fact, when God brought them out of their first exile, right, out of Egypt, he went before them in fire and cloud, right? He pitched his tent in their midst. He led them as their king. He was who they were. They were his people, and he was their God. They screwed up. Hello, let's read the book of Exodus. They screwed up a lot. He punished them for how they screwed up. But you know what? He didn't leave them because he was still the center. But slowly and surely, the people of God began to put their God in a container. And their heart was there. They wanted, right? David's sitting in his palace, and he's going, I have the most beautiful palace in the world, and my God is sitting in a tent. That's not okay. Why did he say that? Because he was missing the point of why God was in a tent. Why was God in a tent? So that wherever they went, they could pick up the tent and move him with them, right? Wherever they went, he was amongst them. But for David, as they began to settle in the land, as they began to take on the people of God as their culture, the things around them began to matter. For David, he had lived in a cave. He knew what it was like to have nothing, but now he had a lot. And now he had power. And now he had the ability to give God cool stuff. So he said, we're building a temple. We're building an awesome, awesome temple. And God's like, okay. So they build him a house. And God, he settles into the house and he says, this is going to be my place. I will live amongst you. But here's the thing. The rules didn't change. The covenant didn't change. I live here because I am amongst you right now. But I'm still your God and you are still my people. This is not a box for me where now you know where to find me when you want to come back. I am still amongst you. And I am still mobile. And I will not be put in a box. And yet, the people of God began to have the people of God be their identity, their culture, not their heart, not their heartbeat anymore, right? And as you watch through the history, they begin to chase other gods. They begin to do other things. They begin to follow and up to the point of like sacrificing their kids to other gods. And it's funny, in Jeremiah, God's upset with them. And you know what? He says, your fathers worshipped other gods, but you have one up to them. You have gone one further. You worship your own stubborn heart. The other people, they worshipped other gods, but they still, it was like they sinned, but God was still their God. By the time you get to the end of the exile, the temple is something you do. You bring your sacrifices because it's part of your checklist. It's part of your work. It's part of who you are. In fact, God gets on them in Jeremiah about not taking a Sabbath. Because the temple became one more part of how you work out. How you work out this life that you're building, right? But what is the sacrificial system about? Was the sacrificial system about worship? But more so, the sacrificial system was about fixing the sin, right? You bring in something to pay for what you do during the week. You come in and you do what you're supposed to do to honor that whatever this God that is part of your cultural identity. Of course, we go to church. Duh. That's what we do on a Sunday. Of course, we go to the temple. We bring our sacrifices. That is what we do. But then the rest of our lives, what do they look like? And God talks to the people of Israel over and over again through Jeremiah. He calls out the kings. He calls out the prophets. He calls out the shepherds. He says to the king, O king of Judah, I'm in chapter 22. Do what is just and right. Rescue from the hand of the oppressor, the one who has been wronged. Do no wrong or violence to the foreigner, the fatherless, or the widow. Do not shed innocent blood in this place. Woe to him who builds his palace by unrighteousness, his upper rooms by injustice, making his countrymen work for nothing, not paying them for their labor. He says, this man says, I will build myself a great palace with spacious upper rooms and large windows and panels of cedar and decorated in red. Does that make you king to have more cedar? Did not your father have food and drink? He did what was right and just, and so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and the needy, and so all went well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord. Is that not what it means to know me? To live with a passion for people all the time. Isn't that what it means to know me? Isn't that what it means to be the people of God? To pour yourself out for those in need around you all the time. We've been talking about the exile. We've been talking about living in Babylon because what's happening in our country to the church is a lot of what's happening to the people of Israel. Sorry. The church, I'm not necessarily saying for you, but probably for all of us to some extent. Being Christian is a culture. Being Christian is an identity. Being Christian means you're against this and you're for this. And how many times when we think about Christian culture, are we really thinking about the heart of God? Because just like with the Israelites, stuff got muddled. And he's talking to this king. He's talking to this king that's like, you know what? I'm really into building my own stuff. And if I build my own stuff, then I will be more prosperous. And if I am more prosperous, then that will speak well of my God, who then has given me. How much of Christian culture has so much to do about building our wealth, building our security, building for us? When God is saying, to know me means to get out and to go. And when we talk about the church, and I'm not talking about now even political culture, I'm talking about like our own church culture. I get the benefit of being a pastor that goes to pastor meetings and meets with other pastors about how they're pastoring and what they're doing in their churches and in their. And there is a huge, huge passion within the church to build the church. There's a huge passion in the church. We call it the butt-to-seat ratio. That actually is a thing, just so you know, that exists in Christian culture. We worry about how many people are in our doors. We worry about whether our worship is going to make the people in our room happy. We worry about whether or not there's adequate space. We worry about all of these different things. About whether or not we're going to make the people in the room happy. When God's heart is saying, to know me is to love. Be impressed. And God just, he begins to go, you know what, guys? Here's the thing. You're getting really caught on this whole temple deal. You're getting really caught on how to make this thing grow. You're getting really caught on how to be this thing. And how to have this culture. And God goes, you've lost me. You've lost your heart for me. The law is not written on your heart anymore. You are not chasing me. And I can tell you, even in our own church, even in our own worship of God, we find a place sometimes where our identity becomes what we do for the church. I'm actually in the middle of an identity crisis. I'm coming out of it. Thank you. I know you care deeply, right? I'm coming out of my identity crisis. For a long time, like over a decade, I was the youth pastor. For a long time, over a decade, I was the Heights Church youth pastor. When we talk about our pastor meetings and all those things that I go to, my identity was in youth. My identity was in what I did. My identity, if somebody had a problem with a teenager, they're going to come talk to me. If somebody wants, if there's another youth pastor in the district, they're going to come talk to me. And all of a sudden, God called me out of where I was comfortable and called me out of what had become my identity and said, here's the thing. I need you here. Okay. So I follow. But in that moment, then, there's this identity crisis. I all of a sudden am not who I was. So who am I? And that is honestly, I think, where we're at as a church. In Jeremiah 23, God talks to people. He says, this is what the Lord says. See, I am setting before you the way of life and the way of death. Whoever stays in this city will die by the sword, famine, or plague. But whoever goes out and surrenders to the Babylonians who are besieging you will live. He will escape with his life. God talks to people and says, you know what, I'm going to exile you. If you want to stick here and dig your heels in and die, you can. But if you go where I tell you to go, you will have life. Does anybody know that happened to us as a church? Like, literally, that happened to us as a church. We sat in a meeting a few years ago that said, here's the thing, guys. I think God wants us to sell this building. I think he wants us to change everything that we've done. I think he wants a whole new model. And we were looking around in a building that had been built by the saints, that had been built with the heart of a people who loved God and who wanted that for the city. We had done everything that we could do. We had worked super hard to make it work. And we were in this point where it was like, we can keep fighting this same battle, or we can give up what we had and find the new thing that God has for us. And unanimously we voted. Just like I went, sure, God, I'll go do that. But then there was a moment. First it was a moment over in 556 where we all were cuddling really snugly all the time. It was super hot. We're like, okay, God, I don't think this is what we signed up for, but okay. It's going to be better, right? It's going to be better soon. Really soon we're going to get into the coffee shop. It's going to be better. And then we got into this coffee shop, and it's still different. It's still not our church building with the beautiful wood ceilings. It's still not is, like, I get an entire pew row to myself. I can lay down if I want. I've got the altars up front where I can just, like, bask in the presence of the Lord. I've got the whole run of the land where my kids can run downstairs and we've got all this space. I have a full kitchen where I can keep all my stuff in a fridge. We still lost something. Just like the people of God had lost something. Their beautiful temple didn't exist anymore. And they were asking same questions that we were asking. The prophets in the exile that went with them, that were not actually prophets, were saying stuff like, 2 years. 2 years and we'll be back. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, keep your bags packed. Live out of your suitcase. It's going to be all right. And Jeremiah sends a letter to the exiles. He says, this is what the Lord, the God Almighty, says to those who carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons. Give your daughters in marriage so they can have sons and daughters. Increase in number, do not decrease. Also, this is really important. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. God called us out of a place into a totally new place. And it's just kind of starting to hit, I think, some of us. As we begin to say, I don't know where I fit. They were saying the same thing. They're going, God, this is not the temple. I don't know what you're doing. And I'm really hoping that you're going to come back victorious, because that's who you are. And God had to showed Jeremiah a basket of figs, right? Back in the day, figs were a thing. They were really important. So he shows him this basket of figs, and he says, there's a basket, and the figs that are really good are like the most delicious figs you'll ever eat in your whole life. They're blessed, they're amazing. And the figs that are really bad are so gross that like you couldn't eat them if you wanted to. They would make worms and grossness. And this is what he says. He says, like, I'm ending chapter 24. Like these good figs, I regard as good the exiles from Judah, whom I sent away from this place to the land of the Babylonians. My eyes will watch over them for their good, and I will bring them back to this land. I will build them up and not tear them down. I will plant them and not uproot them. I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord. They will be my people, and I will be their God, for they will return to me with all their heart. And then I'm going to flip over to chapter 31, because he continues to promise what he's going to do. He says, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with loving kindness. I will build you up again. And he begins to lay out the life that he intended for them. He doubles down on Psalm 23. So remember, the people had really lost their heart for God being their shepherd. Church had become a thing that they did, a culture that they had. And God says, I want a relationship with you. He says, I will lead them beside the streams of water, on a level path where they do not stumble. Because I am Israel's father, and Ephraim is my firstborn son. He who scattered Israel will gather them and will watch over his flock like a shepherd. And then in verse 15, he replays the Exodus story. He talks about a voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because her children are no more. And he says, restrain from weeping and your eyes from your tears, for your work will be rewarded. They will return from that land of the enemy. There is hope for your future. I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. I will put my law on their minds. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will a man teach his neighbor or a man his brother, saying, know the Lord, because they'll all know me, from the least to the greatest, and I will forgive their wickedness. He laid before us the choice. Stay and die, leave and live. And we made the choice. We chose to be the good figs, right? We chose to go. But that doesn't make it an easy road. That doesn't make leaving behind everything easy. What makes us find our place in new land is to understand why God sent us here. Why did God send us here? Was it because we were evil people? No. I don't honestly think this coffee shop is a punishment for our sins. I don't. I don't even think it's a punishment for the church's sins. I actually think that it is God's way of teaching us to love our community the way that he does. To give us a heart for the people. Now, it used to be people went to church. That was a thing. Back when that was the culture, people went to church. When the pioneers' days started, the first thing they built in town was a church. Because people went to church. That's not a thing anymore. It's really hard, but it's not. And no matter how much we love the people from our building, we were taking care of us. And everywhere that we belonged in that system was about us. Everything that gave us our identity in that system, it was about us. And God has put us in a place and He said, you know what? I have an identity for you. I do. Your identity is me. So if you want to know where you fit, you need to find what my heartbeat is in this new ministry for you. Why are you in this room? Because you're in this room on purpose. Not one of you is in this room on accident. Even if what used to define how you worship God is not what defines it now, your God is still your God. And you still love Him. And He still loves you. And you can know Him more if you will press in. I told you I'm in the middle of an identity crisis, and it's been really weird, because the things that I was known for in my circles as a youth pastor, I'm not known for anymore. The ways that God used my gifts in youth pastor circles, He doesn't use them that way here anymore. And I've had to go, okay, God, who am I? And God has gone, well, find out who I am. Because I had spent an awful lot of time finding out who I am, and not as much time figuring out who He is and what His heartbeat is. There are an awful lot of people here that are in my cohorts. Here in this church. My cohorts are really different in this church. I started running cohorts here to do leadership development because that's who I was in my other life. I really enjoyed doing leadership development with youth pastors. And when I started doing leadership development here in the church, you know what I found out? It's totally different to develop you guys than it is to like come beside a pastor and go, you're doing a good job. But to actually figure out, I've got young people in my cohorts that don't know what they want to do with their lives necessarily yet. They're trying to figure that out. And guess what? It keeps me on my toes a whole lot more. Because I have to hear what God says to me in order to speak life into them. It's not like, you know, you should really try doing small groups because that's really how our youth ministry grew. It's, what is this kid's gift? What is this kid's passion? What is God saying to him? There's a whole different skill set. There's a whole different passion. There's a whole different, who am I, God, and what are you saying that makes me dependent on Him in a totally different way? God brought the people of Israel out because He had something different for them to do. God wanted them to have His passion and His heart. And you guys said yes. And He promises all of those things. He promises that He's going to build us up and not tear us down. I've been in this church for a super long time, and I've watched us put a lot of effort into a lot of things. And I've watched a lot of things fall on their faces, no matter how hard we put effort into it. And you know what I'm watching right now? I'm watching God's blessing pour on this place. I'm watching people walk in our doors and have conversations with us. Do you know who would have walked into our church building over there? Nobody? I mean, nobody? Do you know who walks in there every week? David said, I think they were like upwards of, what, 75 transactions or something. Transactions. One transaction was my entire family coming in. One transaction. Do you know how many people walked in our doors this week? So, as you begin to look for your space, look at what God is doing. Look at our community. God moved us because he wants us to know him, and he wants us to be him out. So where do you fit in the needs around us? Where do you fit? What skills do you bring to the table? What passion do you have for the people of the city? Because God told them, he said, plant, eat your food, have kids, marry them off, let them have kids, and then help the city that I have built around you to prosper. Because if it goes well with them, it will go well with you. Where do you fit in being a blessing to this place? Where do you fit in loving the people around us? Your gifts are still your gifts. Your gifts are still of value. How can we retool them to use on the people around us? Living in Babylon is not as awful as I think we make it sound. When you look at Daniel, and you look at Joseph, and you look at Esther, they lost a lot of things, but they gained opportunities that they never could have had before. Would anyone in Israel have thrown Daniel into a lion's den for praying? Probably not. But what kind of faith did Daniel get out of that? What kind of miracle did he get to see in that? Would anyone have thrown you into a fire for praying in Israel? Probably not. But in those moments, we are tested. It is in opposition that our faith finds its feet. If I have the right to pray, it becomes something like, oh yeah, I should pray this week. If I don't have the right to pray, you better believe I'm going to be praying. I'm going to sit at my window and I'm going to pray. Because if somebody tells you you cannot worship your God, you know what it makes you do? It makes you go, is that right worth the persecution I'm going to get for it? Is this thing that I believe in worth the discomfort, worth the opposition? It makes you question the things that you took for granted. We have that opportunity. Your words are going to look different with somebody who doesn't believe in Jesus. The things that you would maybe say to a Christian friend when you're talking politics or talking theology, whatever it is, are going to look a whole lot different than if you're having a conversation at a coffee shop with somebody you know doesn't know Jesus. Your words are going to look different. The things you believe about God are going to get challenged. You're going to have that compassion for someone. You're going to get to know people that you didn't know before. And you're going to see in them the humanity that it's easy to forget they have when you don't have contact. God is putting us in a place where our faith has to have feet. Because it's challenged. Because this isn't our space anymore. It's the community's space. So who are we going to be in this space? Who does God look like to these people, and how can we make him look as he